G'day everybody and welcome to the Hardball Gets AFL show, taking a bit of a ringer approach to the Australian rules game. My name's Nick Rinn. I'll be joined by Xavier Ellis. G'day, Zave.
G'day, mate. Thanks for having you.
No worries. And Ryan Daniels will join us later in the week too for a bit of fantasy action. So I won't take up too much of your time here explaining what it's all about. Let's just get stuck into it. This is the Hardball Gets AFL podcast brought to you by the Mazda BT50, built like a BT50. This is the Hardball Gets AFL podcast. My name's Nick Rinn, Xavier Ellis. Welcome to the show formally, mate. I know we just did a little one, but welcome fully.
No, mate, we've been chatting about this now for a couple of months, and I suppose with football only a month away, I can't wait to get into it.
It's genuinely like, with JSE starting up this week, like, I'm genuinely keen now. You know you get sick of footy at the end of the year, but I'm genuinely keen.
Well, I was chatting to one of the more established West Coast players. I'll name Luke Shuey on the weekend, and he was saying that with only two JLT Cup matches, it's going to be foot to the floor, even in the preseason games, with most teams sort of putting their best players out in the park to get the fitness up. So I think even JLT might be of interest.
Well, that's what we're going to do today. We figured we'd start with a bang and go with the 10 most interesting JLT players this year, 10 most interesting players to watch in the JLT. So why don't you kick us off?
All right, mate. Well, I'll start with my first one. Now, this player has just been traded to the Fremantle Dockers. He sits at 207 centimetres and he's on a lot of money,
$800,000. The biggest of the big boys.
Big Rory Lobb. I think now at the age of 26, he's well and truly done his apprenticeship. The role at Fremantle is there. He's got Jesse Hogan, so he definitely won't be the first forward that's matched up.
Yep.
I think he's going to have to get up the ground, maybe the Perth weather, a bit of heat. He's a good runner. He's a very good runner. GWS tried him on the wing at times. I just don't think that was a viable option for GWS. Their ball movement was far too quick to have Rory Lobb loping around on the wings, if that makes sense. So
yep.
I think Rory Lobb at Fremantle is going to be a player to watch, and I just want to see him take the footy and work his backside off. And I think there was words coming out of GWS last year. He didn't want to do any ruck work.
Yeah. Do you think should players be able to make that call?
I don't think so. I mean, I did watch the soccer this morning, and I did see that the goalkeeper refused to come off the park.
Yeah.
We don't want to venture into those waters. But look,
if you refuse Ross, you know he's going to be there at quarter time. So it's not really the best tack to take.
And you might not be there next week either. So I think you're not expected to play large chunks in the ruck. They've got the Sean Darcy's and those sort of guys who can. Obviously do the bulk of the work, but it is a good opportunity, I reckon, for those guys like Nathan Vardy in the grand final, just to get up the ground, get your hands on it, and then you can go back into the forward line and do your craft down there. But I think Rory Lobb at Fremantle this year, I think Fremantle will be actually pretty good. I think when I say pretty good, they might be fighting
still,
for the...
Like, I'm still really worried about their midfield. Like, they've sorted out other areas, but they get real shallow there really quick.
Don't they? And if they lose Fife with a hamstring or something, it is. And I mean, Dave Mundy... He's like Benjamin Button. He's getting better with age after last season. But, I mean, you can't put all the load on Benjamin Button himself. So, I mean, their midfield is pretty shallow, but they need Rory Lobb to play. On the 15th of every month when he goes to get his paycheck, he needs to have played like an $800,000 to $900,000 player.
Is it a lot easier when he says he wants to play in the forward line? Is he going to find out that it's a lot more fun playing forward at GWS than it will be at Fremantle?
Well, having said that, David Hale, the forward line coach at Fremantle, he's pretty happy that they do now have Tabernar, Lobb, Hogan. All you need to do is get it in there 50 times a game, and that is plenty for that forward line.
And I saw them run around in an intra-club last week. They've got what seems to be they're going with their three talls and then just cutting out the middleman and having literally like three smalls at their feet. There's no medium forwards or anything. It's just big and small down there.
Reminds me of under-13 football when coming up through Lakes Entrance where they'd have the big tall dope and then you'd have the short backside next to you and you just bring it to ground. If you bring it to ground, the little fella would do all the work. So
that's if you weren't having a ping from 50, is that right?
No, I couldn't get a kick back then. I couldn't get a kick throughout my entire career, but I certainly couldn't get a kick at 13s.
All right, my first one I've got down is Matthew Kennedy. So he's a GWS first-round pick. He went to Carlton, and you kind of expected him to take a bit of a leap. I think he averaged about 17 touches in his second year at GWS. Mm. Went to Carlton, you think he'd have that bit more time on ground, really, a bit more of an opportunity to get his hands on it. But I think he actually, if anything, his stats stayed about the same. But impact-wise, everything else, it seemed like he slid back a bit.
I reckon he did. I reckon, too, it's similar to what we spoke about with Rory Lobb. when he was at GWS, the class in that midfield at GWS, there was Shield, Kelly, Coniglio, those sort of guys. So, I mean, 17 disposals then, you're fifth, sixth, seventh in line. So no one's really paying you much attention. Whereas at Carlton...
If it's not Paddy Cripps, who is
it? Yeah, and he did get a lot of weight put on his back, unfortunately, there, Kennedy, for a while. And he did look tired on the field a lot of the time. I think he had an ankle problem
in the preseason. He definitely like had ankle problems through the year. So he might have been coming off a bit of a low base. But yeah, you're right. There were like he just didn't look like he had a lot of energy.
And I mean, at that age too, your running base does increase massively from preseason one to two, two to three. Once you get up to about preseason five, I mean, you're probably not going to get much fitter. You sort of hit your capacity. Whereas I think Kennedy does still have a lot of room to grow, and I'd just love to see him a little bit more fitter so he does get, you know, you see him in the congested ball, you get him, you know, hustling and bustling around the contested footy.
Yep.
He's just got to get that running ability so he can get a few cheap kicks on the outside. And that's what the midfielders really work towards. And it's not something shameful to say you get the cheap ones, but if you've got the running ability, like a Andrew Gaff, he has 35 touches. 20 of them are probably just because he ran into space because he's a good runner. And I think for Matthew Kennedy, he needs to be able to get away from congestion and just find a couple of cheap kicks because at the moment he does look like he has gone to war 22 games of the year for old Matt Kennedy.
Where do you think the stigma came, right? Because everybody wants to win contested possessions. Mm. And if someone's winning like, you know, two-thirds of their touches are uncontested. It seems like they've almost, like, it's or should be shameful. I don't know. When did that start?
Yeah, the odd sayings that they build fences to keep certain players in the ground and that sort of stuff. I think Dane Swan was a good example. Dane Swan played a lot of midfield time.
Yep.
But he had a great spread of uncontested disposal, and that was probably at times people ran too much, and Swanee was like, what's the point of me running into that position when I'm going to get it on the way back? And I think probably that when for us, at, when I was at Hawthorn, watching Dane Swan play was when we realised that running a million miles an hour and running from first quarter to fourth quarter as hard as you possibly can doesn't always mean you're going to get the footy.
Yep.
It's running smart, and I think Matthew Kennedy just needs to run a fraction smarter and find those spaces.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he comes along, because Carlton need guys like him to come along. Like, you don't give away a bunch of draft picks
they did
to get blokes in.
Yeah, they did give a bit away, didn't they? So, but I think he will have a good season. I wouldn't be surprised if he was averaging over 22 disposals. I mean, he's going to get a lot of midfield time again.
Yeah, and he should have built on that base, as you said. It's about fourth, fifth year. There's some talk that the third year of footy is the one that's the most difficult, and then fourth you kind of blossom. Is that anything that you – have you ever found that?
It's a good one. It really just depends on what surgery and stuff you get these days. I mean, if you can get through – some of the players that get through their careers without injuries literally have 3 weeks off in the off-season.
Your mates.
do whatever they want, drink, party.
Yeah.
They don't run, they eat whatever they want, and then after the 3 weeks they just clock back on, and it's like a seamless bit of transition from being lazy and fat to, you know, training. But some other kids, unfortunately for them, get the sore groins, get the calf, get the Achilles and all that sort of stuff, so they don't have the ability to jump back in and just keep blowing themselves up through pre-season.
Who's next on your list?
Next one on my list, mate. I'll stick to the Western Australian flavour. I've got another Western Australian, Jared Brander from West Coast, 195 centimetres, pick 13 in the draft, two drafts ago now.
Yeah.
I watched a game against East Perth for East Perth last year, and he had about six touches in the first quarter, and four of them were as high-class disposals as I saw for the entire day. I reckon he ended with 10 disposals for the entire match. So his first quarter was far, far better than what the output was for the next three quarters. But his class and his ability to play forward, wing and back, he just displayed to me that I reckon he might, even though he's playing for the Premiers, he played one game last year, I reckon he might get an opportunity, and he's a very, very classy young kid.
Well, he kicked three last week in the intra-club in about a quarter and a half, I think, and then went off with a bit of a hit point of bruise.
Well, reports from that game was just some of the older players were like, what about Jared Brander?
And
I think what happens too, especially at West Coast and Fremantle when they're travelling all the time, the senior players just don't get the opportunity to go down and watch the waffle.
Yep.
So you really rely heavily on the reports coming in from the coaches and
You're seeing at training.
And then when you see it firsthand, because in season you don't train that hard. You don't do, you know, 18 on 18, you know, gear five, let's hit it out as hard as we can. So you probably don't get to see it. Whereas intra-clubs, well, it's the one time a year where they call it dancing with your sister. It's not much fun, but you do have to do it, and they go pretty hard. And from what I hear, until he did go off in that game, he was arguably best on ground.
Yeah, key forwards will take a little bit of time too. When he key forward, key back, they played him a bit of both, didn't they?
Yeah, and I do hope, and Simo is obviously much, much smarter than you and I, but you do hope with a young kid like that, they don't go forward, back, wing, and it's great
pick
a spot, nail the spot down first, and then you can, you know, as you get a bit more confident and a bit more established throughout your career, you can float around the ground a little bit more. But I'd just love to see him play that third forward, maybe, you know, behind a Darling and a Kennedy if they're not playing that ruckman, or sit him down back and let him take a key position player.
Yeah, we're talking about picking a spot. The next one on my list is Harris Andrews from Brisbane. So
yep.
Elite, like genuinely elite key defender. I think he ranks on the AFL measures, he ranks at elite. It spoils one percenters, and he's above average intercept marks. He disposes the ball well when he gets it. I think he's going 85%. But there's talk about swinging him forward. It always really concerns me, and I don't see a need for it. There's not a lot I've ever seen about Harris Andrews that's made me think, like, oh, geez, he'd be a good forward. Eh?
Yeah, no, and they've got Rafa Nadal in the forward
line.
Yeah,
they do. My man, Eric Hipwood.
So him going down there, is he going to take, you know, not the load off Hipwood? You don't want that. He's a young kid that's got so much talent, and they have compared him a little bit to Buddy Franklin. For mine, he's not anywhere near that. But he's got those talents where he could be a very good player. So I think for Harris Andrews, get in the back line. Last year he was in the Australian squad.
Yeah, he would have been. He would have come real close if he didn't get knocked out.
Yeah, that report that happened up in the Gabba.
Well, he had bleeding on the brain, jeez.
Yeah, not great. Not great. So for mine, good one. I think he arguably will be one of the two or three best defenders in the game this year.
Yep.
And hopefully at Brisbane too, to be the best defender in the game at Brisbane, where they've probably been under a fair bit of attack over the previous years. I mean, Brisbane haven't been, they showed a good signs last year.
He's had a lot of opportunities to be a good defender.
But also a lot of good opportunities to have goals kicked on him. Yeah. And they didn't really happen too often. So that's always a good sign that if, you know, Lachie Neale and those guys who have now moved, they can get the ball going in their direction a little bit more often, then Harris Andrews can sort of relax a little bit. And then that's where you might see him become that ultimate defender.
What do you think's behind these decisions? Is it just coaches having too much spare time on their hands over the offseason? They think, geez, what about Harris Andrews? Maybe you go forward.
Yeah, he's probably taken a pack mark once at training. And they've gone, geez, that was Wayne Carey like. Let's get him up there. Let's give him a run in the goal square.
Well, they've got blokes like Dan McStay. This is my thing. So he might be an okay forward.
Yep.
But Daniel McStay can be an okay forward. Daniel McStay can't be an elite defender.
Yes.
So chopping and changing like that, they're going to do it at Brisbane because they're not quite at that level yet, so they've got the opportunity to make some moves. But I think from all reports in this practice game against Gold Coast the other week, he played three quarters in the forward line, did nothing, and they've ended up going,
It's again one of those things. He's a young guy. You don't really want to head screw him. He's had a very, very good season last year. But would you say he's mastered defence yet? I wouldn't say he's mastered it. I wouldn't say he's...
I'd say he's coming close.
Very close to, which I think he's probably a season away from being, arguably, as we said, the best defender in the game.
Yep.
Give him that opportunity to be the best defender in the game.
Yeah, you don't want him to be... I mean, Luke McFarlane wasted a lot of years switching forward.
Swinging around, yes, until he bedded it down at Fremantle that he was one of the great defenders.
Yeah.
You know, you sort of think, did he waste part of his career floating around? So for mine, I'd be leaving Harris Andrews in defence.
Yeah, who's your next?
Well, I'm going to go the key position back again, mate. And the person I think will be
defenders
the best...
Defenders are getting some love here.
The best defender in the competition at year's end.
Oh, this is going to be a big call. Is this our first hot take?
Yeah. Alir.
Really?
Sydney Swans. Alir. The last six or seven games last year when he just floated off, marked everything, takes the game on, quick. He makes simple decisions, which is great. Sometimes he can overcomplicate it a little bit. Keep it simple, stupid sort of theory. Give it to your Mills and those sort of guys that'll be floating around the back line. But for mine, he served his apprenticeship because he did get in trouble and he did spend a lot of time in the knee full.
Yeah, it seemed like Horse didn't like him for a little while there, didn't it?
No, it did. And he has played 28 games total. I thought he must have played a lot more than 28 games. But he's played 28 games Alir. He's at the age of 24, which is go time. Yep. So for mine, I think Alir, with the forward line too of Sydney Swans, and they'll still be a good team. They'll be competing around the eight, maybe top four, whatever it is. I think Alir will go to the next level, and I think you'll find he'll be all Australian this year.
Well, there's spots available in the Sydney back line, aren't
there? There is.
Their key defenders are getting older. There's still guys like, even Dane Rampey would be 30.
Well, Rampey, Nick Smith, Reg Grundy.
They're all getting to the back
is
end.
Is Reg still going around?
Yeah, I think he's got another year. Yeah, I might be wrong there, but we can always edit that in post.
Oh, but old enough. They're an old back line. At the age of 24, he's strong, fast, reads it well. Obviously now he's bridged his gaps with Horse.
Yep.
They loved him at the back end of last year.
You become a lot more friendly when you need him.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And also when you get in a game, you're more friendly towards the coach as well. The coach is the funniest person that's ever been landed on this earth. So, I mean, their relationship seems to be going pretty well. But for mine, Alir will be all Australian this year.
A lot of people are quick to write Sydney off, but it seems like they've got enough young guys coming through. They seem to just pick them from everywhere.
Always dangerous to write them off. Like, what could Isaac Heaney be this year?
Yeah,
he could go to that Dane Swan. Dane Swan. He could go to that.
I'd be very surprised if he came out with the Dane Swan.
I don't think he'll go Dane Swan, but he could bump into that Martin sort of where they can go forward and back and kick some goals and then go into the midfield. He could be one of those sort of players. And I mean, Mills, we didn't see a lot of him last year with injury. They've still got Josh Kennedy in the midfield. Callum Sinclair, an old West Coast Eagle, had a very good season. So
Ollie Florence, good young player who's getting minutes. Yeah, they've got enough there. They've got to seem to have a good balance, and people just seem to write off Sydney.
Every year, and every year they play finals. So we'll see what happens this year.
Yeah, they also do have a big fella named Buddy, who's
Buddy Franklin, and I think everyone says, oh, Buddy's been around for ages. He signed that 9-year deal or whatever it is. Bud's only 31. He might have just turned 32. So he's 32 all season.
Yep.
You still expect 50, 60, 70 goals from arguably the best forward in the game.
Yeah, he's not looking old at all, is he?
No. When he's injured, he looks old. I remember there was that game where Horse came out and said he'd only trained for 20 minutes for the entire season or whatever.
Sounds pretty good.
That was sort of the program I used to try and get on. But he did look a little bit ginger last year. But once that was gone, he looked as quick. Especially early in the season, he had that hot spot where he was amazing. I expect that to happen again.
Round one at Optus Stadium. That was good fun.
There it is. Eight goals. Yeah, no, he was brilliant. And I mean, when Bud turns up and he plays, I used to always argue that Buddy's the best player in the competition. When he turns up and kicks a bag, you can't be stopped.
Yep.
You just can't be stopped. Whereas, for example, if Nat Fyfe's having an amazing day and he gets the 3 Brownlow votes, he's up against Luke Shuey. Yeah. And Luke Shuey might have 30. He won't be as good as Fyfe. But his 30 v 35 and some good marks, he's not like an 8-goal bag where you just can't stop it.
Yeah. Well, scoreboard pressure's the best kind of pressure, isn't it? Oh, well, some people would argue that. Others wouldn't. Next one on my list, kid off the Gold Coast. Haven't seen anything of him yet, but he is probably I'm the most excited to see him than I have been in a draft day in a long time.
Yeah, right.
It'd be Isaac Rankine.
Okay.
So pick number 3 out of South Australia.
Yep.
He probably slid down the order because people had seen too much of him. He was one of these kids. He was an All-Australian when he was 17. He was an All-Australian when he was 18.
Yep.
He kicked a bunch of goals in the 18s. There was that one game.
Was he a private school boy, do you know? Did he play school footy and then a bit of SANFL and all that sort of business? Yes. So he played around in multiple leagues. And
he's played against men. Yeah, yep. He's played everyone. I think he played school footy with Jack Lukosius, who's on the Gold Coast with him as well.
So, yes.
Just one of those little wizards. One of the guys you turn up to watch play footy, he can pull the ball out of anywhere and you can think, like, he's never going to get past this.
Yeah.
And he'd take a step, spin around 3 guys, kicked a couple and gave off 1, I think, in this first intra-club. Not intra-club, practice game against Brisbane.
Yep.
And first one I'm going to describe, I said he rode from a stoppage, pushed off his defender and drilled it on the run from 50.
Yeah, he sounds talented. And I'm glad Gold Coast did take the other SA boy as well.
Oh, for a bit of that stay away the go-home factor.
Yeah, get your best mate in there. And I used to say that the go-home factor is not a big issue because if you have a good football team that wins games and are competing for premierships, you're not missing your mum and dad too much. Let's be serious. You're playing finals, you're playing prelims, you're playing grand finals. Mummy and daddy can sit at home and turn up to the games whenever they need. But the go-home factor saying, I miss mum and dad, is purely an excuse that your footy club's not going great.
It's I don't know how they fix it. There's probably I've got a case for extra years on your draft contract.
Yeah.
2 years seems like nothing.
It does.
And if 2 years and you're not getting a game and your club's going no good, of course you're going to want out.
Well, especially if you're a young kid too. So your first year drafter, you don't do much of pre-season. So you never had a pre-season. Then you might come in and if you're lucky, you're picked.
Yep.
A lot aren't. A lot don't get picked.
Yeah.
So then by the time your second year comes around, you've got 1 year left on your contract and your home team's starting to swoop at you. So, I mean, I understand the extra couple of years, but I think, you can do that. But I also think the Gold Coast just need to sort their stuff out and just make it a good football club. And Stewie Jew, who I know personally, is a great guy, an absolute ripper. Did his apprenticeship under Clarko, then Horse Longmire did a long time at Sydney Swans. He will do a wonderful job as coach.
I can't remember him being at Hawthorn. How long is he at Hawthorn? I remember him playing.
Playing. Funny, actually. When he first turned up to meet with Alistair Clarkson about coming back, Dewey would have been 130 kilos. And I was sitting down at a cafe below with a couple of guys, and I was a big fan of Stewie. Dewey retired from Port Adelaide when he was 26, I think it was. Came in, and I just assumed he was going for a coaching role. I was like, that fat bugger, no way in the world could he be possibly. And then sure enough, we've picked whatever it was, Stewart Dewey. So that's how he came in. But he's a wonderful, wonderful guy, a real player-coach relator, I'd imagine would be very good, as he was probably 6 or 7 years older than I was, but he would treat you like you were the same age, same level, and I can imagine him doing that as a coach.
I don't know how many times you've watched it back, but Stewie Jew kicking those goals in that 08 grand final was one of the great moments, because he was still, well, he would have still been like 100
and
plus.
It was a hot day.
Yeah.
It was a hot day. No, he was an exceptional talent. And people forget, he was an A-grader at Port Adelaide. He was a very, very good footballer before he retired and moved to Hollywood chasing a Hollywood actress. There you go.
Really?
Yeah. Teresa Palmer, I think it might have been.
Was he successful?
No, they were together. Yeah, they were together, and then she moved over and did some acting or did whatever she was doing in movies or whatever, and Dewey just didn't fit in well in America.
In Hollywood? He doesn't exactly look like the Hollywood type.
Nah.
Who's your, you're up next? Who you got?
Harry McKay.
Oh, yeah?
From Carlton. Now, another one, 21 years old, he's 200 centimetres, in and out, a little bit of VFL, a little bit of AFL. Towards the end of the season, he ended up playing a lot more AFL than he did VFL, but there was times where he did get left out, you know, just randomly.
Seemed like a long period where Bolton didn't want to pick him, but there was no one keeping him out.
No, it was strange. It was really strange. So I think he's one that, and when he did come in and play, Carlton were getting smashed. They were getting absolutely demolished at weeks, and he sort of showed enough in big losses where you think this kid could be a really good player. I mean, he was messy at times, but he had speed, he attacked the footy. I think his kicking at times was a bit shonky in that. But again, another pre-season, when you're a goal kicker and you run your backside off, sometimes that is the part, the fatigue and goal kicking. So another pre-season for a 21-year-old. I think he's just got to play 22 games at full forward. Don't worry about swinging him around. And it's going to be important with Carlton that Wietering does lock down that defensive role.
Yeah, there was another one they swung. That was dumb. Well,
they're the two, I think, that they just need to say, righto, for 22 weeks, and they do that, coaches. They do say, we need this kid to be a good player. We're not going to guarantee him 22 games, but for the next five, don't stress about your position.
Yep.
You are going to be picked. If you have one touch, five touches, 30 touches, whatever it is, you're going to be picked. Just play your role. Do what you're working on. And I think with Harry and also Wietering, they need to do that. Just say, I know you're number one draft pick, Wietering. You're going to play fullback. And do they have Richmond round one again, they're opening the season?
Yeah, they do. That humdinger that we've had come to love so much.
So you've got Tom Lynch or you've got Jack Riewoldt. Stop him. Simple as that. Harry McKay, you've got Alex Rance, a pretty good defender, you'd say.
Beat him.
Well, yeah, compete. You don't have to beat him. They're probably, you know, in the back of their mind, they'd be hoping they win, but realistically, probably Richmond are going to start favourites.
Yes, just like.
Just see if you can knock it out, Mark. See if you can hold Rance accountable to manning you up as opposed to dropping off and marking everything. So, for mine, I think Harry McKay needs a big season. He's 21-year-old. He should have a bit of engine. And Buddy Franklin, we just spoke about, has ruined it for every other 21-year-old key position player because I think he kicked 120 that year. But, I mean, yeah, if he can get away the season and hadn't kicked 40 goals, I think that's a massive, massive win.
Harry McKay has probably got my favourite answer to those. You know, there's player profiles in the AFL record every week. You know, what would you take to a desert island? And then was what does your coach always say?
Yep.
And Harry McKay wrote, you're playing VFL this week, Harry.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Next one on my list, Jack Billings from St Kilda.
Yep.
Just a really interesting player. He looks a million bucks some weeks. He was dropped to the VFL last year and picked up 54 touches and came back straight back in the next week.
Ernie's position.
Yeah, just slightly. But he's one of those ones I reckon they're trying to fit him in a role that he doesn't really fit.
Where would you play him?
Well, you play him on a wing and forward, don't you? Like that's, and you're just comfortable with that. Like we were talking about before, like not everyone has to win their contested touches.
Yeah, so of course.
He's not going to do that. And at times they've tried to like bring him into that on-ball rotation and just see what he can do because he's got some special skills and he's got a great kick. He's got elite disposal. He can create some really good goal opportunities, but it seems like you're just beating him up in there and no one's having real fun with it. Like, no, I don't know. I don't understand what they're trying to get out of it.
Well, I think it's one of those ones where you see the top clubs who occasionally put in a player for a bit of a spark. Cyril Rioli might go in for a centre bounce or something and he wins it.
Willie Rioli went in for a couple in the grand final.
Willie Rioli does it. And I think it's one of those things, if you do it, it's done for one centre bounce, done for two centre bounces. We're not doing 5-minute rotations with your A-graders.
Preferably your last name's Rioli as well.
Yeah, that seems to work pretty well. Yeah. But yeah, I'm with you. Jack Billings is, he's not an A-grader. I think he's probably...
I think he has potential to be an A-grader based on sort of what we've seen in patches. He has potential to be an A-grader, but I think you've got to work with him really, really hard this year and nut down exactly what he can do and make him do it.
And he seems to miss quite a few opportunities with his set shot goal kicking. He had the yips a few times. I mean, if you nail, he probably missed 10 easier goals.
Yep.
You put those 10 goals next to your name at the end of the season, you've had quite a good season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all about converting those opportunities that he was making. And he was drafted around Bontempelli.
Yeah, he drafted it ahead of Bontempelli, yeah.
Right next to Bontempelli. So he's obviously, and he has shown at times that he is capable of being an A-grader, All-Australian. Mm. You know, that really top cream level. It's just consistency. And I think it also is consistency with the coaching.
Well, I think Dom Sheed said to me that year, that was his draft class as well, and I asked
him, was it?
Who's the best out of your class?
Mm.
And he said Jack Billings.
Like, yeah.
Without hesitation, based on what he'd seen junior. So I'd love to see this kid. Well, I'd leave St Kilda because I like watching him, and I don't like watching St Kilda games too much. But
they'll
be
an interesting team this year, won't they?
Yeah, will they?
In terms of coaching.
They're the one where if someone's going to go, it's going to be Richardson. I think he's already pulled out of his Fox Footy commitments as well.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, yeah, that would be what they wanted to talk about all year.
Yeah, there was an interesting story that went around a couple of weeks ago. Was you got each player or each leader? I think it might have been every player to write on a bit of paper an answer to a question he posed, whatever it was. And then he went away on a holiday. He didn't open them, didn't look at them, went away on a holiday.
Took him to Harvard or something?
Yep, took him to Harvard, opened them up and read them. And Jarryn Geary apparently delivered quite a aggressive letter. At times, but I think might have been a little bit insulting, but it was more around focus on what we can do. Let's stop focusing on what we can't do as a football club.
Does that throw up even bigger red flags, the fact that he had to go through an exercise like that to have that message delivered? Don't you think that... Like at a club where everything's working well and everyone's on the same page, you're allowed to have those kind of discussions week to week?
See, I don't know Alan Richardson. I think he very limited time with him, and he seemed like a lovely, approachable guy. I have spent a long time with Adam Simpson. I mean, if there was any issue at the football club, I can't imagine too many of the leaders, especially I can't imagine any of the leaders not just knocking on the door saying, "Hey, Simo, how about this?" And I think he probably at times would come to you and say, "Hey, Zave, what are you thinking about this? Am I going too hard on this person? Am I, you know, missing something here?" And I think you've got to have your fingers in all the pies. You can't miss anything. And I reckon maybe from what you gather from the letters that were written to Alan, that he might have just missed a couple of things.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's going to be really one to watch, but maybe not watch games of.
Yeah, I am a St Kilda fan too. I do enjoy... just from their, you know, 2010, for some
Those
reason.
Those games are good. There was a game that comes up occasionally on Fox Footy. I think it was 2011, around 11 or 12 in Geelong and St Kilda.
Eddie had.
Yeah, we're both unbeaten, and that just
Big Michael Gardner took a big mark late, I reckon, and kicked the seal or whatever it was.
Just an unbelievable game, start to finish.
And their grand final. But I do love St Kilda from that little era that I had probably 5 years ago.
Who did you used to play on when you were playing then?
St Kilda actually played on Robert Harvey in his last game. It was
really?
A prelim final. I remember thinking, I was 20, he was maybe 35, might have been around that age. He was pretty old by the time he finished. And just standing next to Robert Harvey at a stoppage was, for mine, like, I'm touching someone
greatness.
I admire. And I used to have little issues with that. Like Shane Crawford, I couldn't get over the fact that I admired him so much that he was a friend and a teammate. And I probably at times... was a hindrance as opposed to a help, because you always felt like, oh, you do it, Shane. You're the best. You do it, Shane. You're the best. And I think, so Robert Harvey, I used to get a little bit. Tag Goddard occasionally.
Oh, yeah?
He
would have handled that well?
Yeah, I think he put me to the sword one night. I think we were 50 points up, and then Brendan Goddard and Lenny Hayes and those guys decided to hit fifth gear, and we got left behind 55 points up. Anyway, I'm still scared of Clarko after that one, but... Mate, my last player is a Hawthorn player, and he's a very good player. Jager O'Meara.
Yeah.
Played 21 games last year, averaging 24 disposals. Sounds great, but obviously with Tom Mitchell going, Hawthorn will have ambitions to finish top four again. They finished top four this year. They won't change their goal at all. Top four, top four, top four.
So is that the goal each year? Because everyone thinks, like, the general consensus is that they were kind of... It was just a year where anyone could have finished top four, and they did it. But they would have been like, we deserve this top four spot. We are a top four side.
Absolutely. And I think the league is really diluted. At the moment, I think at the moment, not so much Gold Coast, because they don't really have that cream.
Mm.
GWS most definitely do. So I think right now is when we've seen, and you look at the past winners, the Bulldogs came from nowhere. Not many would have picked Richmond.
Mm.
Not many picked West Coast. I mean, the league is that even. If you have a good... 10 weeks early to build the confidence. Confidence is such an amazing thing in football. Build the confidence like West Coast did. They jumped out of the block so quickly. You realise that there's no team better than you. And I think at the moment it is from 1 to 10 is very, very level. You've got some, obviously some teams that have got the home ground advantage, like West Coast, Fremantle, Adelaide,
Richmond last year showed it as well.
Well, the MCG, yeah. Then you sort of pencil those in, and that's where they elevate to the top four. But I think, yeah, Hawthorn, they'll be top four hunting. I don't think they'll get there. And Tom Mitchell going is the biggest loss. So O'Meara needs to go to that level where he was, and I mentioned it before, he wasn't an A-grader last year. You know, A-graders I put in, there's not many. It's your Elliot Yeo's, your Fifes, your Martins. It's not a big pool of A-graders. He's probably a B-grader right up the clack. I mean, but you know the talent O'Meara's got. If they gave up a fortune to get him, he's a good, good player. He's had obviously a season where he wasn't injured last year. And that's his knee was obviously the concern for such a long period of time. So he's over his injuries. I saw him playing a practice game the other day. And if he had worries about his knees and whatnot, he wouldn't be playing those early preseason games. So he looks like he's ready to go. And I think for mine, he needs to be, for Hawthorn to be competitive in terms of top-level competitive, he needs to be an All-Australian starting midfielder and probably averaging that 28 disposals, because he did have a brilliant season last year, but Tom Mitchell's gone. So the number one midfielder's gone. O'Meara needs to step up. And when I say step up,
He's already at
the mark. So I'm not being critical, because he is a star, but I think he needs to go to that superstar category where if you watch a lot of football, he's at Gold Coast. In that first couple of years, he was the next Chris Judd.
Well, that, do we think, like you say, he should be an A-grader and he's around an A-grader. A lot of people think he's an A-grader because of those years on the Gold Coast, looking at that, going, oh, he's going to be an A-grader. And now they're just like, oh, yeah, he's an A-grader. But he's not quite there.
Yeah, and as I said, I put so few numbers in the A-grade category.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like, it's not a – each team doesn't have three or four A-graders. Yeah, Hawthorn, I think maybe Luke Bruce would be an A-grader.
Well, are you talking about like four positions?
I just don't have a lot of A graders. The All Australian squad's probably a fair indication of how many A graders there are in the league.
Luke Bruce will be the A grader. James Sicily's one who's touching.
He's right up the freckle.
Yeah.
Wingard on his good seasons, Wingard's an A grader. So O'Meara's in that.
Yeah, I forgot that they pinched Wingard there for a second.
Yeah, and Tom Scully's another one that could be an A grader. They're all right on the category of going into, and I say, I'll name again, the Dangerfield Fife, Yeo. I put Yeo in there now. I think he's earned the right to be in that category. But, yeah, he needs to be the All-Australian. I think he can. Like, he had games last year. He was having 30 and kicking a handful of goals. So he's obviously got that. But, I mean, if you could see it, like the Gary Ablett days where he would have it 8 times a year, he'd single-handedly pick the team up and carry him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think without Tom Mitchell, O'Meara needs to be that player.
Do you think he's capable of being that?
I think he is. If he's over his knee, the way he was moving around, and he wasn't getting the run with as such as what... he probably wasn't getting at the Gold Coast either, because Ablett and those were there. This year he probably will. If a team's tagged, they don't always tag anymore. So that's one of those little red herrings that some tag, some don't tag. But I think he can. He's shown last year was one of those ones where they always say your first year back from injury can take some time. He played a good season last year, and I think he has got another step to go up.
Is that the mark of an A-grade midfielder, that you're tagged every game regardless of whether they sometimes tag and sometimes don't?
Yeah, he's almost... Well, you've got those players that people change game plans around.
Yeah.
He might nearly jump into that category, and he has to for Hawthorn to get into that final four.
All right, I'll finish your one off with a guy who's had a lot of buzz out of South Australia this year, Sam Powell-Pepper.
Yep.
So he's going into his third season now. Thank you, mate. It's just a bit of a wog in the throat.
Monday morning, mate. Big weekend.
Yeah, it wasn't. I had the weekend off for the first time in a long time. There's been a lot of talk about him, just on him coming back. So he trimmed a lot of weight, which is the first thing to increase his running capacity. But I think last year they were trying him a lot more in a defensive midfielder role. So he was still picking up similar numbers, but he was far less attacking. So he didn't have as many shots on goal. He wasn't getting the ball inside 50 as much as he did in his debut season, which is everyone gets a bit of leeway in their debut season because no one knows who you are.
And of course.
No one knows when to pay you attention, what everything else.
Yeah.
But as they sort of flipped it on its head last year, where he was paying too much attention to the other side. So
he had some games where he might have broken a record for tackling at some stage.
Just went nuts with the tackles.
Which I think is a good sign that you're a competitive bugger, but it's also a sign that you're not hunting the football as hard as what you're probably used to. And I think Sam Powell-Pepper is a tough nut. He's a bull in a China store.
Mm.
So, I mean, if he's just chasing the football, he's going to lay those tackles anyway. But people know where Sam Powell-Pepper is on the football field. I mean, if you're...
You're going to feel it.
Well, you just know. He's one of those players where if he gets you, you've been got. You're a chance of breaking ribs and that sort of stuff, or doing a shoulder if he tackles you, whatever it is. And I think he is a player. He's at times messy. He's a messy player at times. But he is, after a season where he was dropped, he had some off-field stuff going on.
Yeah, he had a bit of a weird season off field.
So, I mean, everyone has weird seasons here and there that they're not, you know, it's not their best season. I mean, it's hard to compare someone who's only played two seasons.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, you can easily just rub that out. And it's not a trend. It's just he still had some good games.
He did.
But it's not a it wasn't a trend that he was playing poor games. So I think get rid of that season, start again in that midfield, away he goes.
Well, the difference this year is Jared Schofield's gone over Coach Subiaco and the Waffle and taken control of the midfield. And I think under a new midfield coach, you know, some guys bring different ideas. And I think Ken Hinckley's given him a bit of leeway to make some changes. And he wants Sam Powell-Pepper to be, it's easy to say this because of the Fend, but he wants him to be sort of like a mini Dusty.
Yeah.
You're not going to be Dusty.
Yeah, of course.
There's only one Dusty. But
he's only 20?
Yeah, 20 years.
Do you know what was Dusty doing when Dusty was 20?
Yeah, true. Well, he definitely wouldn't have had the same impact that Powell-Pepper had in his first season. But Dusty's one of those guys who probably had to grow into his body and everything as well.
I think, too, for mine, Sam Powell-Pepper's not one of those players at the moment who should be spending a lot of time forward. Because when he goes forward, for some reason I picture him always bending over, gasping for air when he's forward. Maybe it's time to go to the bench and then come back on as a midfielder because he is, as I said, someone that midfielders worry about, but he's also, when he's got the energy, wins the stoppages, hits a body, it just creates havoc. Whereas if he's tired, I think he's one of those players that lags a bit when he's tired. So it might be one where he's not going to do much forward. This trend of sending all these good midfielders forward,
you don't have to send it all there.
It doesn't work. Not everyone kicks goals. I mean, Paddy Cripps the other night at AFLX kicked 96 points or something. But, I mean, it doesn't mean he's going to kick goals in the AFL league. So
Paddy Cripps has shown that he can kick goals when he goes forward.
Of course, but would you rather a goal or 10 clearances?
Yeah,
I mean, he does the work of three or four men in the midfield. Just let him do that sort of stuff. And I think that's similar to Powell-Pepper. Let him do his work in the mid. Let him come off for a breather. If he has to go forward because of rotation limitations, that's fine. But let him play deep. Let him get his oxygen back, and then off he goes again.
And also just point him. I think the thing is point him in the right direction this year. Point him at their goals, you know, looking there the whole time rather than looking at his man all
the time.
Yes,
of course.
All right, so that's our 10 most interesting players of the JLT. I'm actually pretty surprised we didn't have any of the same.
We didn't double down. Well, I was going to list the 10 stars, but I've gone elsewhere.
Oh, so what's you were going to go with the 10 stars, just your favourites?
Yeah, Luke Shuey's and that sort of stuff. Because they're playing JLT, how are they going to come back this year? It's very, very hard to defend a premiership. Yeah, every week the opposition's playing potentially their grand final to beat the Premier. So I think West Coast is a good one to keep an eye on because defending a Premiership is very, very difficult.
Is there going to be any changes? You know, everyone seems like when a team wins a Premiership, there was some kind of strategy they used that everyone tries to emulate or goes after them to a different level. Do you think that's happening at West Coast? Or is it still, is so much of the comp still surprised that West Coast won it that they might just consider it like a bit of an aberration, from left field.
The only thing they really did a bit different was because the Bullies were a little bit smaller up forward and smaller around the football as well. In general, the flick and flick and flick.
Yeah, they were a little
Tom Boyd had a fantastic grand final, but he wasn't really a centrepiece of the Bulldogs season that year. And Richmond played small as well forward, whereas last year
Jack's
West Coast
surrounded by smalls.
West Coast went Darling, Kennedy when he was fit, and Darling when he was fit, and then Nathan Vardy or Scott Lysett. So they were quite tall in their forward 50, which was a little bit unique. So I don't know, maybe this year, and Richmond definitely will, obviously, with the inclusion of Tom Lynch. But it'll be interesting to see whether they do follow that trend of playing someone just a little bit taller up forward.
And if you're looking at trends from the past two, foot skills.
Yes.
If you're looking at trends over the last 15 years, foot skills, isn't it?
And that was a difference in that prelim final against Melbourne was West Coast ability when they
just
got that.
Hold it.
Oh, gee whiz. And they have underrated speed in that midfield. Mm. Shuey, Yo, Redden can run. It was just like an explosion went off. And if you use the football well, like West Coast do, it's very hard to stop.
And so one thing, do you think clubs train that enough?
Kicking?
Yeah.
No.
Why?
No.
Did you at Hawthorn?
We sacrificed running sessions.
Mm.
So Clarko and then would say, righto guys, pre-season, we didn't do much running at all, which was a massive difference when we came to West Coast, which has now changed. So rather than doing 10 400s, we'd just do a 15-minute running drill with footballs involved. So you're equally as fatigued, but you're still kicking the football.
Yeah.
And we obviously did, you know, kicking on Tuesdays, which was a low-key day, and, you know, some people would go and kick on their day off, whatnot. But I still think kicking, you know, you need to. You should be having 1,000 kicks. And I'm yet to see someone kick a football with an ab. You know what I mean? Like your Pilates and your yoga, that's great. But if you can't kick the football, you won't last. And I think at times, it falls probably third, fourth, fifth, sixth in line. Whereas I think kicking, Hawthorn, you know, if you lined up the 10 best rigs at Hawthorn when they were in their prime.
10 worst kicks?
No, well, against other teams.
Oh, yeah,
against
yeah.
the 10 the worst teams.
Oh, okay.
You know, the Jordan Lewis's, the Luke Hodges, the Sam Mitchells, they didn't have the fantastic rigs, but gee whiz, they could kick a football.
Yeah, that
works. I think that's because their focuses were obviously on maintaining strength and health and that sort of stuff, but they knew the importance of kicking a football.
It's the number one skill, isn't it? And that's what wins premierships, and we've seen that. But some they always seem to pick out some other element of a premiership side that they need to emulate.
Yeah, exactly right. The zones and the ability to interchange quickly and all that sort of stuff. When really, if you can't kick, you can't play.
That's one golden rule which has stayed true over the ages. Although looking back on some of those old games, they couldn't kick at all. No one could kick. So.
No, don't. You'll have the 70s people jumping down our throats.
All right, thanks, Dave. Good to have you in, mate. That seemed to work all right, didn't it?
Yeah, it was good, mate. I enjoyed it. Talking footy.
All right, well, we'll go later. Tomorrow we'll put up the first of Footy Rhino's fantasy previews. Wednesday we'll do a two-minute warning, 2 minutes on each team in the comp so everyone gets a bit of action. And then we'll round out with a little bit more Rhino fantasy for the week. So thanks for joining us. Stick around. Make sure you subscribe. It'll be up on iTunes on the Tuesday, I think we go.
Yeah, beautiful.
So yeah, subscribe, rate it, leave us a review. Unsubscribe and subscribe again because I think that helps you in the iTunes charts.
That does it. I've got the missus on maternity leave, mate, so we might set her on to subscribe and unsubscribe.
A bit of RSI in the index finger. All right, good on you, everyone. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you later in the week.